To please the Court, my name is John Scott. I represent the appellant Susan Liu in this matter. First of all, Your Honors, I would like to remind the Court this is an appeal from an order granting a motion for summary judgment, and under Rule 56C, inferences are to be drawn in favor of the non-moving party.
Counsel, help me with something on this case. When I read the record, it looked to me as though there was a genuine issue of fact about whether she was a good staff attorney or a bad staff attorney, but it's not material. What's material is whether she was fired because of her age, her race, her sex, or retaliation that was improper. Some retaliation's okay, some isn't. If it was improper retaliation, it looked to me as though there was no genuine issue on those things that was made out by the evidence. I could see nothing whatsoever to show that she was fired on account of her age or her race or her sex and so forth. So even if they were wrong, the judges who thought that she had an integrity problem or competence problem, even if they were totally wrong and unjustified in their views, I can't see where their reasons would be pretextual in the absence of any evidence that she was fired for any of those things. Well, help me on that.
Thank you. I'd be happy to. There are three claims here, Your Honor. There's a FMLA claim that has no intent requirement at all, which I'd like to discuss. There's a state law wrongful termination and violation of public policy claim, which has to do with the fact that she ran for judge. That has nothing to do with race or gender.
Wait a minute. If there was a judge who said she gave him a really bad memo, and then when he was talking on the phone, he got a phone call, she snuck a good memo into his file and removed the bad memo without permission. That was the integrity problem.
That was the alleged.
He fired her or caused her to be fired for that.
No, he did not.
That would not give rise to any of those claims, would it?
Well, he did not participate at all in the decision to terminate her. It was not his idea to terminate her. He wasn't asked if he wanted her terminated, and he didn't participate in that decision, number one. Number two, it was, in my opinion, drawing inferences in Ms. Liu's favor, this was really a relatively trivial, insignificant matter of which if the jury could easily look at it as just a misunderstanding in terms of whether it was appropriate for her to switch memos.
That's what it would be if the jury accepted her view. It would be an innocent misunderstanding.
Which on summary judgment you should be drawing inferences in her favor. But the most important point, your issue, on this issue, Your Honor, is Judge Warren had nothing to do with her termination, did not ask that she be terminated, was not consulted regarding the decision.
He had nothing to do with the termination?
As far as the decision.
One of the supporters.
All he did was report that this event happened.
Well, yes. And it strikes me it doesn't really matter if it was innocent in her mind. What matters is if it was innocent in his.
But he didn't – let's assume that's true. He didn't make the decision to terminate her. He didn't make that decision. So if he didn't make –
But the incident did have an impact on whether or not she was terminated.
Well, it impacted – it was another reason used by people who were already out to get her.
Well, if somebody tells me that somebody who works for me has done something dishonest, but the person who tells me says, now, I'm not responsible for hiring or firing or anything like that, and I don't want any responsibility, and I'm not telling you what you should do about it. I'm just telling you there was somebody who works for you did something dishonest, and then I fire them. You're saying that the dishonesty is not a cause of the firing because the person who told me about it didn't do the firing?
What I'm saying is that there's two ways to look at it, and if you want to look at it that way, you can. But if you're drawing inferences in favor of Ms. Liu, it seems to me a jury should decide that. Number one, was she dishonest? Number two, was it in fact a reason that she was terminated.
Wait. I don't understand why a jury would decide, was she dishonest? The question is, was she discriminated against?
Yes.
And if she's fired because the employer has an incorrect belief that she's dishonest, this happens sometimes. An employee in a retail store gets fired for stealing from the cash register and was actually framed by another employee who stole from the first one's register. It happens sometimes. B steals from A's register and gets A fired. The employer isn't discriminating against A on account of race or sex or anything. The employer's doing something unjust without knowing it because B successfully framed A.
Well,
so I don't understand why A's honesty matters to the jury.
Well, Your Honor, let me put this in context. I understand your point, but I think you're making it out of context. They were meeting. Judge Dondero and Judge Kramer were meeting with others back in December, January to discuss setting this woman up for termination. This alleged and they had set it up. They had billed a file on her during January, February, and March to terminate her before she was ever transferred to Judge Warren, which we believe was another act to set her up to fail.
Counsel?
Yes.
Counsel, you keep saying that they were out to get her and that they were setting her up. Now, I didn't find anything in the record that would support that. Now, what do you have? Because that's critical to the case, and if you can't support it in the record, you've got nothing.
Well, I agree, and I'll be happy to address that. Let's start with the fact that it was Judge Kramer who moved her into the appellate division in December 2004. The reason he gave was that 3 years earlier, Judge Garcia had made a comment to her about her performance being lacking, and he waited 3 years to put her in a position so she could be evaluated. And so that was the, and she was, by the way, the first staff attorney ever evaluated by the Superior Court, and the only reason given was by Judge Kramer, a comment Judge Garcia had made 3 years earlier. In those 3 years, she had worked in the discovery department and in the probate department. She wasn't asked to be evaluated in those assignments, and her performance was satisfactory in those assignments. So then Judge Garcia was asked about that comment. Did he, in fact, make a comment to Judge Kramer that he was not satisfied or had questions about her competence, her performance? Judge Garcia denied ever making such a comment to Judge Kramer. So now we have a credibility issue. Did Judge Kramer make up a reason? And further, there was an issue in that essentially same conversation. Judge Kramer, when he was talking to Judge Garcia, mentioned that he was concerned that Judge Garcia was supporting her in the election, was backing her as a candidate. According to Judge Garcia, Judge Kramer said to him, where's the effect that he was upset that Judge Garcia was supporting Susan Liu because it would make it more difficult for the court to terminate her in the future. Now, if the jury is, now this is a classic credibility dispute. Judge Kramer denies that he made that statement. Judge Garcia says he did make that statement. Well, if Judge Kramer,
I lost the thread of how it bears on discrimination.
Well, if Judge Kramer was upset about the fact that she was running for judge, was upset about the fact that Judge Garcia was backing her for judge, and Judge
Kramer said, counsel, where in the record do we have any evidence that those were his concerns?
Whose concerns? Judge Kramer?
Kramer, yes.
Okay, that would be, let me find it for you, Your Honor. That would, that would be I believe yes, it's referred to, I believe, at pages 12 and 13, my opening brief, and the references would be to, at least there, Judge Kramer's testimony at the references would be at ER 1685 through 87. And then if you give me a moment, because I know this is referred to extensively through both the opening brief and the reply brief, it will take me a moment. Perhaps when I take my break, I could come back and give you the exact
site.
Judge Garcia's testimony. I apologize. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue. But it seems to me there's another issue, and the issue of Judge Kramer is compounded by the fact that there's a significant a dispute between his testimony and Judge Dierman. Judge Kramer?
I thought Judge Warren wanted to get rid of her because he thought her work was no good and he didn't trust her. Judge Kramer looked over the work that she had given to Judge Warren and thought it was incompetent. And Judge Kramer recommended firing her, and it was done because of unacceptable work performance and loss of trust. And I'm having trouble tying any of this to the discrimination claims, that it was because she was female or Asian or whatever age she was, I can't remember, or any of that.
Well, Your Honor, and actually to set this thing up, I think Judge Bea, who's a colleague of yours, helps put this the claim in context. Judge Bea.
His deposition testimony was funny. He says Republicans and males were scarce and ran scared in elections, but she's not male. She's not Republican. I don't get it.
Well, the Republicans were afraid of Democrats, and she's a Democrat, number one. Judge Kramer's a Republican. Judge Kramer was in some of these celebratory meetings.
Oh, you're saying it was a purge of Democrats?
I'm sorry?
Are you suggesting it was a purge of Democrats?
No, what I'm suggesting is that in a city that has only 11% or 12% registered Republicans, if you're appointed a Republican judge, you according to Judge Bayan, it makes sense, you're going to be concerned that you may be, his term was picked off by a Democrat who may decide to run against you in a town that is predominantly Democratic. In addition to that, there's a phenomenon of Asian identity voting.
Was she running against one of the judges that fired her?
No, she did not run against the judge who fired her, but that was the potential.
That's why I keep losing the thread.
There was the potential that she would in the future. That was the concern. Your Honor,
the potential that anybody will run against.
But she had already run and came very close to winning. So it's not just this
third. She came in third.
Yes, but the person who came in second, who beat her by 2 percentage points, ended up winning in the runoff. And the record here is that because of Asian identity voting, if she had got that more 2%, and this was all Democrats, she was one of three Democrats who were running against each other for an open seat.
You're not saying she was discriminated against? Oh, I think I know what you're saying. You're saying it was a Republican conspiracy against Asian female Democrat staff, because they might eventually win and then be running. I keep losing it.
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to save a minute, but nobody's saying there's a conspiracy. There's a judge who admittedly was upset that she ran and who expressed that to a Judge Garcia who manipulated the process. But it seems to me, and forgive me for making this point, the FMLA claim, in my opinion, is very strong and very straightforward, does not require intent. And I would encourage the Court to look at the FMLA claim instead of being highly skeptical of one of three claims, the discrimination claim. And if you want to be skeptical about it, that's fine. But the FMLA claim here, I believe, is very strong and deserves your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good May it please the Court, Greg Richardson for San Francisco Superior Court. Your Honors, I wanted to first address the evidence of Republican bias here, just to point out that the only evidence other than Ms. Liu being a Democrat is that Judge Bea held cocktail parties, celebratory cocktail parties for the Republican judges. Now, by that, you know, by any inference that is to be drawn by that, we would expect Judge Bea, too, to be discriminatory, but Judge Bea actually endorsed her election.
He supported her, as I recall.
That's exactly right. So there's no evidence of Republican bias, and I would also point out if, you know, celebratory parties were evidence of discrimination, then, you know, we would have expected many Republicans to be terminated in November and be able to bring suit. There's no evidence here. I'd also like to address Judge Fletcher's question regarding any evidence setting up to fail. There is no evidence in the record that the court set her up to fail at all. First of all, he cites testimony stating that the position was created based solely on this conversation with Judge Garcia in 2002. That's not actually what the record holds. Okay, the record first of all states, and I can provide Your Honors with actual page numbers, the record first of all states that the reason the position was created was for business reasons. There were budget cuts that were coming. They wanted to move the research attorneys, the floaters, to cover other places, right? That's Judge Kramer's declaration on page 1511. And then we look to the pages, and it's 1685 through 87 in the record that was addressing Judge Fletcher. Here's what he actually says. When asked the question, why did you place her in this position, what he says is, I had had complaints. Well, first of all, what he says is, I'd been thinking about creating this position for a long time. So that's undisputed. He didn't create the position for Ms. Liu. He said, Ms. Liu, or rather, let me step back one second. It's also undisputed that Ms. Liu requested not to be a floater. Okay? That's undisputed. That is Judge Hitchens' testimony. And that is not disputed by plaintiff. So she asked not to be a floater. So they placed her in this position. Judge Kramer did actually state that he had had complaints about her performance from Judge Garcia and the Discovery Department. That's on page 1687 of the record. So it wasn't just Judge Garcia. Now, I'd like to talk about the Judge Garcia testimony that appellants relied so much upon. First of all, credibility issues aside, I think it's immaterial because it occurred 3 years prior. And here's what the comment was. The comment, according to both of them, was something to the effect that how can you support her? This will make it difficult for us to terminate her for performance reasons. Okay, if that's actually the testimony, then what that would establish is what? You know, that Judge Kramer back in 2002 believed that she had performance reasons. Doesn't establish that he was angry that she was running for office. He was angry at Judge Garcia for endorsing her, according to that inference. And if you also look at the testimony of Judge Garcia does say that he never called her incompetent. But here's what's undisputed. They both state, both Judge Kramer and Judge Garcia state, Judge Garcia state that Judge Garcia had said that Ms. Liu could not handle all the duties in law and motion. Now, what Judge Garcia says is, well, what I meant by that is she was only assigned here part-time. I needed more help. What Judge Kramer takes from that, if you read the record, is that she's incompetent. Okay? I mean, so it's undisputed at most that there is a confusion. So that's actually the record of being set up. I'd also like to address the FEMLA claim, because that's what counsel has ended with, saying that he feels that is the biggest claim here. First of all, it is wrong to say that FEMLA is not an intentional statute. It is, in fact, an intentional statute. If what counsel
this
needs...
This is leaving because the idea that she was fired for...
asking for family leave?
For leave because her husband was sick or dying?
That is correct. And they also raise points that we weren't allowed to transfer her, which I will address. FMLA is an intentional statute. I mean, this Court actually says that, you know, that you have to actually, the plaintiff has to prove that the protected leave constituted a negative factor in whatever adverse employment action. He is correct that it's not an animus-based statute, okay? And so the cases from this circuit, for instance, the Batchelder case, states in that particular case, the employee was terminated because the employer believed that her leave was not protected. So there was no animus under the statute, but it was certainly, there was intent. The employee was terminated because she took protected leave. They were just wrong about that.
So what you're saying here is there's no evidence that her asking for or getting any leave to take care of her husband had anything to do with the termination?
That is absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. There is no evidence.
But it happened 3 months. His termination occurred within three months of the time that she asked or took off the last time, right?
I didn't hear the last part of your question.
Or took off the last time.
She does. So Judge Breyer below did say, if reading it most favorably, the one piece of evidence she has is timing. However, it's not enough. And let's look at the undisputed facts here. Okay, prior to, she says she first raises this December 10th, 2004. However, in November 18th, she is actually already told she's going to be transferred into the appellate division. Between that time and December 10th, there are multiple conversations between the four judges on the appellate division and the presiding judges saying, we don't think Ms. Liu's work is up to par. They have multiple conversations with her. Indeed, they're having that conversation with her on December 10th when she goes and says that, when she now states that she first requested leave. So the performance issues predated any request for leave, and they actually postdated the request for leave. But here's the other thing to remember about the Family Medical Leave Act. It's not an affirmative action statute. It's not an affirmative action statute. It's not a reasonable accommodation statute. You have no greater protection than any other employee who hasn't taken leave, apart from the ability to take leave, meaning that I can terminate people who are on leave, who have requested for leave for performance reasons. I just can't factor in their intermittent leave. Here, there's no evidence. The evidence from the judges is performance-based, and I would actually take issue, Judge Kleinfeld, if I may, with your initial question to opposing counsel, that there's maybe a disputed issue of fact as to performance. I don't think there is a disputed issue of fact as to performance. She doesn't contend, other than computer breakdowns, changes in format, that she was actually not performing to the judge's expectations. She says, look, it was a new position. I didn't know criminal law. But she doesn't actually, I mean, this is what every employee says when presented with criticism, right? It's human nature. But there is no disputed issue of fact, I don't think, that the performance reasons or performance issues were actually.
She didn't say I was doing a great job, it was just politics that they got me?
She did, but that doesn't create a disputed issue of fact as to performance. And I believe it's the Cornwell case that is cited to this Court that says an employee's subjective opinion of their own performance is not evidence of pretext. So if the question is, did she dispute that she was a bad performer? Yes, she's disputed she's a bad performer, but it's not a material dispute, and it's not a credible dispute. So the other thing I'd like to point out in terms of the Family Medical Leave Act, so they talk about transfer, as I said, and I believe their brief by the reply states, the opening brief states what they should have done is placed her in a position that was less stressful for her. First of all, I would point out that they've abandoned that in reply. It's also, this leave was for her husband, and I'm not saying that taking care of a family member is actually not a stressful thing. I presume it was stressful, but all the FEMLA requires is that she be given leave for that, and she not be punished for that. And she was given leave, she's conceded that, and there's no evidence that she was punished for it. It's not as if she dropped a note down saying from her doctor, I'm too stressed, now what I need is a different position. I need reduced duties, et cetera, in my position. There's no evidence of that. The only evidence is she placed down a request to take intermittent leave. She took intermittent leave. There's no evidence.
There was nothing in any of the papers or discussions relating to her firing saying she takes too much leave?
There was absolutely nothing. If you look at the declarations of each of the judges, and this is uncontested, they all state that none of this, that did not play a factor in their mind. And, in fact, Judge Warren, the evidence is in the record, in his deposition, in emails in the record, in his declaration. Any time she requested leave, he said, go ahead and take it. It had nothing to do with whether she could do legal research and writing, which is what his issue was with her. And the other thing with the Family Medical Leave Act, when I said that it wasn't a reasonable accommodation act, what I mean by that is when you are in the position, you actually have to be able to perform the essential functions of the position. The essential functions of that position, legal research and writing. You know, there's nothing. She hasn't indicated. And, in fact, one of her responses to the court, she said, I get my stuff in timely. So there's no indication from either side that the taking the leave in any way was a factor in her termination here. If I may, quickly, Your Honor, I'd like to just address a couple outstanding issues in the brief. In terms of the running for political office, I do think it's pretty clear that regardless of the evidence, and I've already talked about there is no evidence there of causation, the court is actually immune from suit here. Both parties have discussed this mandatory immunity and also discretionary immunity. Discretionary immunity arises under California Government Code 815.2. That states the court can be held liable for the vicariously liable for the acts of its employees. If the employees are not already immune. One of the immunities could be discretionary immunity under Section 820.2. In their brief, reply brief, pages 14 and 15, appellant admits, we're not bringing suit under 815.2. We are seeking a mandatory or direct liability, which requires a mandatory duty. So all of the discretionary discussion in the briefs, the U.S. or rather the California Supreme Court case of Caldwell, not an issue in this case anymore. And it's pretty clear the cases we've cited, including the Clausen case, including the Eldridge case that is actually directly on point discussing the statute, that what is required is a mandatory duty, an affirmative obligation. It's not enough to just have shall in a statute. It means we have to actually require the government to do something, and 3203 doesn't do that. And then finally, Your Honors, I would just point out that there is no evidence of any violation of Title VII or the FEHA. First of all, there's no mention in the brief of age at all, so we can presume that the age has been dropped. The only mention in the brief of gender is that she was a woman. Okay, there's your prima facie case, but that's not enough.
Is it a prima facie case? Did they fire women but not men, or do they have almost all men in the staff attorney positions, or is there any?
Absolutely not. In fact, they have mostly, at least according to this record. Now, I didn't. To be clear, I didn't run the case below, so all I have is what Your Honors have. I was asked to do the oral argument.
You've got the record we have, so you
right.
Know the answer.
And so there are depositions in there from numerous female staff attorneys. None of them have been terminated, presumably. She talks about this particular, and Adrienne Majlesi, I believe her name is, the female staff attorney, and the woman that whose job she temporarily held in probate was named Stella Cardozas. I presume Stella is a female name, but, you know, I should be careful with my presumptions. But there is no evidence other than the Asian identity. Right? And what the Asian identity, all that establishes, if you set aside the potentially racist connotation of the expert's declaration that Asian Americans will vote for Asian Americans regardless of their qualifications for judges, if we set that aside, there's no evidence that any of these judges knew about Asian identity voting, none. No evidence that they factored into their claim, none. So we would, you know, in the end, Judge Breyer got it absolutely right. There is no evidence here, no evidence at all, other than the fact that Ms. Liu is Asian, a Democrat, and she requested intermittent leave to actually hold or to impanel the jury to find any type of discrimination. And if Your Honors don't have any further questions, I'll submit.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The reference to Judge Garcia's testimony is in the record at ER 16-63. It is referred to at page 7 of the appellant's opening brief at the top. I would like to note that the it seems to me now it's conceded that my client on December 10th, 2004, notified the court that her husband was suffering from a terminal illness. At that time, her assignment to the appellate division had not become final. That assignment did not begin officially until January 1st, 2005, 3 weeks later. The point, Your Honors, is that under the FMLA, it is true that an employer can transfer someone, but not to a position that is more demanding, that has a more difficult job assignment. And that's what happened here. And this is an important point that I think may have been missed. Number one, most staff attorneys for the San Francisco Superior Court do not have to do any research or writing as part of a job assignment. And none of those staff attorneys have ever been required to pass some kind of litmus test or any kind of writing. I'm sorry?
They don't do research or writing?
They do not. Most of them do none.
What do they
do? And that's in the record. And
what do they do?
Oh, they do things like in the access to the court department, they help pro per parties fill out forms. In the family facilitator department, they help out poor indigent people getting divorces fill out forms. In Department 212, they do an administrative function of setting up trial dates for courts. I could go on, Your Honor. It is in the record, and specifically in our reply brief,
That's okay. You answered my question.
All right. But that's undisputed, number one. So most staff attorneys do no research or writing, number one. Number two, before January 2005, my client and 14, 15 years with the court, it never had to do research and writing where she was submitting bench memorandum to the other judges. When she worked in the municipal court, in the limited jurisdiction courts, she was primarily doing landlord-tenant matters and limited jurisdiction matters where her contacts with the court, with judges, were 100% face-to-face, where it was verbal, not written, reports to the judges on the basis of her research. When she was working in the probate department, which was a year and a half before this new assignment, she rarely did research and writing. The job was mostly doing handling ex parte applications. And when she did research and writing for Judge Dierman, she always reported orally, verbally, never in writing. So what happens? On December 10th, she tells the court that her husband is suffering from a terminal illness. And on starting January 10th, she gets assigned for the first time in her career. She's been there 15 years. The first time in the career, she has an assignment not only where it's just research and writing, where she doesn't do oral presentations to judges, that she has to prepare written documents for the judges to review, like I'm sure the bench memo that you gentlemen have. But this is the first time she's ever had to do it, number one. Yeah, and number two,
you ought to be winding up because you're 3.5 minutes over time.
But the point is that new transfer created a hardship. And within the statutes, under FMLA, if an assignment creates a hardship, it's in violation of the statute. And what else did the statute say? It does. And it also says that at the end of your leave period, you're entitled to return to an equivalent position that you had before you notified the court of the medical situation. Now, all the positions that she had before December 10th, none of them required her to do any research and writing.
Counsel, you made that point well.
That's it.
Thank you, counsel. Lou versus Superior Court is submitted.